And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. It's Arthur Staple. Welcome back to No Sleep Till Belmont, your Islanders podcast from The Athletic. Just want to remind you this podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at directtv.com. Very excited for our December co-host this month. We haven't had anybody who's coached the Islanders on this program before, and so we're very excited to welcome the Islanders coach from 2008 to 2010, a longtime coach in the NHL and the AHL, played in the NHL way back when. We might even get to a little bit of his time with the Quebec Nordiques. Scott Gordon joins the show. Scott, it's great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Arthur.
Well, I want to start, nostalgia is big around here now that the Islanders have opened a new arena. They're in a very different place than they were when you were coaching them. How do you look back on your time coaching them? It was a couple years, one that was not so great and not very well supported, I guess, with a roster. And then you had John Tavares' first year. And what do you look back on from your perspective that you learned or that you did, you know, in your years as the Islanders coach?
Well, I can honestly say that when I started that first year, I wasn't ready for it. Not the circumstances that it happened anyway. Your first coaching opportunity, the one thing that you hope you have is goaltending. That can get you through a lot. You know, hide some mistakes, make you look a little bit better as a coach, and help you build some trust within the team. And one of the first things that I was told that I wouldn't have to worry about was goaltending, because Ricky DiPietro was just coming off a all-star year, and he was trending upward. And then, you know, I think my first year we had him for five games. So, you know, it was a tough way to get started. That first year we had, I think half the team, you could divide it down the middle, where half the team was under 22 and the other half was over 30. And a lot of the guys that were over 30 were, you know, pretty much finishing up their careers. Obviously the guys that were under 22, a lot of them were just getting started and beginning their careers. So, you know, we didn't have that bridge between the two groups that first year, and compile that with all the injuries. You know, there were just a lot of hurdles, and having to deal with a lot of things that I don't know that many coaches are used to, but certainly not a first year coach.
There is one Islander, still an Islander, that you coached then, and you know Josh Bailey was just drafted and jumped right in as an 18-year-old, and I think that's something that's been debated pretty intensely over the intervening 13, 14 years, whether Josh Bailey was ready for that time in the NHL, how it affected him. How did you experience your couple years with him as a teen when he was a teenager?
It's funny. I don't think the plan was that he was going to stay and start the year with us, but we were so thin at center, and it was kind of one of those things where he wasn't, he performed well enough to put it into consideration that he was going to stay. And, obviously first year player, 18 years old, you're going to have your hurdles, but, I always found him to be a receptive, person, good attitude, and with all the 18-year-olds, same thing with John Tavares, their first year, a lot of it is just strength. They obviously have skills and skating ability, but, going up against men, I can remember watching Chris Pronger and Chara just, physically abusing both those guys as 18-year-olds. And as a coach, you're trying to keep that away from them and protect them. And, and put them into good situations where they can succeed. And you know, overall, I thought Josh did a good job of handling that.
You also had a couple of guys, Matt Martin, and obviously we were talking about Tavares. He's not a terribly popular subject on this podcast or with Islander fans these days. But his first year, there was, you know, the draft that summer was obviously had a lot of hype around it, and that first year had a lot of hype. You guys improved by I think it was 19 points from the previous season. I'm sure Dwayne Roloson being there helped that too in net. What was the thing that stood out to you the most about Tavares as an 18-year-old?
Well, for me, the biggest thing that stood out was when he was an 18-year-old. I found that everything he did in the offensive zone below the top of the circle, like, to me, that was his strength. And, you know, when I saw him play when I was in Toronto, and that would have been probably 3 years after I had had him that full season. I only had him for 15 games the second season, and he was stronger, but I saw a different level of skating and strength, power that I hadn't seen the entire time that I was with him. And I was really impressed with how much he had improved and the time that he had to put into building up his body and getting to the point where you could see the significant strides that he had made in his game. And now it's like, it wasn't just about what he was doing below the top of the circles as an 18-year-old. It was what he was doing up and down the ice. And it was great to see, happy for him. You know, again, like, to his credit, he had to make some adjustments going from junior and into pro and having to deal with playing against men. And I can remember him coming in his second year. I think it was right at the beginning of the season or maybe the first couple of games, but him saying that he really wanted to focus on his defense and be a plus player. He didn't just want to be considered an offensive guy. And I thought that was a great sign of maturity that, you don't often see too many younger players. They're worried about that. They're more worried about their points. And, you know, that really stuck out in my mind. And there were a couple other things too that, I found him to be a guy that, if you challenged him, there was a certain situation with the workloads and what he was doing compared to the other centers on the team. And when I presented that to him, like, he took that personally and went out and got better at it. And, you don't always get that from, the guys that are the cream of the crop. Sometimes they just want to do it their way. And I always found John to be a guy that was, willing to get better and work at his game. And that's one of the things that I appreciated the most.
You weren't there for the success that would come, a few years later, but a lot of the guys that were a big part of the success of the Islanders, maybe 2013 and then further on 2014-15, guys like Kyle Opozo, like Franz Nielsen, Andrew McDonald, Mark Streit, those were guys that came in under your watch. When you see them have success, obviously it doesn't feel good that it's happening for a different coach, but do you still feel like you and Dean Chenoweth and Scott Allen played a role in those guys kind of being part of a core of what became a pretty decent perennial playoff contender for a little while there?
Well, I mean, I guess you do a little bit, but I think that honestly, if you looked at all those guys that you just mentioned, they're all high character people that I consider have high character that I think they would have trended that way no matter what. And, as much as, it might feel good to take credit for it, I still think that no matter who's the coach, that they were going to get there. And, they certainly they all had varying levels of success. But one thing for sure is I think they're great people and they had good attitudes and I'm happy for all of them.
It's interesting to think about now, and Islander fans probably have blocked it out a little bit. I don't know if you have, just the experience of being around the team and for you being part of the organization when Charles Wong was running it then, and kind of that in between time before Tavares came, and then right after he came when the team was not quite as financially free as they are now under Scott Malkin and John Ledecky, and they have a new arena, which, you know, Charles had always pined for, and it was a very lean and mean front office run by Garth Snow. You know, you've been in different organizations over the years. Was that experience kind of a unique one? And, you know, how do you as a coach kind of get people through that when maybe they're feeling, you know, guys that have, like you said, veterans that have been on other teams that maybe have been treated a little bit differently or seen a different operation, and they're now on a team that's run in a little bit of a different way?
No, I never really thought too much about all that stuff, what was going on with other teams. And I mean, I'm sure there was, you know, some of the players who had come from other organizations and had different experiences. But, you know, by my second year, there was, you know, our older players were probably the guys that had been with the Islanders for a while, or they were younger players and really didn't know anything different. You know, I always thought we were treated well. I never really thought much about it. I think the one thing that has certainly changed in probably the last maybe 5, 6, 7 years is I think a lot of teams put a lot more investment into the players' needs, whether it's nutrition, whether it's off-ice training, facilities, travel, meals. You know, I mean, I don't even think we had my last year. I'm pretty sure we didn't even have anything as far as nutrition, you know, going on as far as breakfast, lunch, and now like the guys are pretty much fed all day, and not just, you know, something from a sub shop down the street, but you know, food that is prepared the right way and has nutritional value, and really like. The players now, you know, they're given the tools, all the tools to be successful. And I think as an organization, the NHL, you have to compete with all the other teams because everybody's doing it now. And, you know, I went when I went to Toronto, there was quite a difference between being in Toronto and being with the Islanders, you know, from the facilities and what they spent on the players. And I think that's all kind of leveled out with all the teams now.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So we'll stop reminiscing about your love for Iceworks and Syosset, Scott, and move on to the current Islanders. And, you know, they're not playing right now. They were supposed to play tonight against the Flyers. Obviously, they're in a COVID pause. You and Lehigh Valley, the team that you coached for the last 6 years, the Flyers affiliate, had to deal with a COVID outbreak kind of early in the very shortened AHL season last year. And that was before vaccines were widely available. So I'm sure the experience was a little bit different. But when you see what's going on with the Islanders and that trying to play through some cases and all that stuff, are you thinking, you know, you have must have a lot of sympathy for what Barry Trotz is going through? But also, you know, can you kind of take us through how you have to go about getting ready to coach a game and prepare your team to play a game with also the protocols and safety guidelines that are starting to be put in or other things that you might not have to normally worry about as a coach?
So, you know, we had two minor breaks on false positives. I think New Jersey, or they were playing in New Jersey, but it was Binghamton. They had a false positive. So that, because the guy played the first period, we actually had to miss a week and we didn't have any guys with symptoms or positive tests. And then I think it was in April where we actually had some guys that did come down with COVID. And you know, the first two times it was nothing major. Everybody was healthy. So once we did get back on the ice, we were good to go. The hard part was the last one in April, where we had a stretch of time where we weren't playing a lot of games. And all of a sudden I don't know how many guys there were, but we had a group that was tested positive. One of the coaches was tested positive. And the biggest challenge is everybody that comes back from that comes back at a different state, you know, like you're, mm-hmm. you know, like I had COVID in August of this past August. And it was 10 days of the same thing and just being wiped out, no energy, no headache or taste was fine, smell was fine, but all I wanted to do was sleep. And I didn't have any congestion, a cough or anything like that. But then, you know, somebody else might have different symptoms. And so, you know, when you're trying to put together a practice and or put together lineups and you're trying to figure out, you know, where guys are at, you know, everybody's situation is different. And you know, you're going into a game like we came back from it. We played our first game, and we lost. And I don't remember what the score was, but the one thing I do remember is we had guys that didn't have any energy that just played because we didn't have a whole lot of practice time. So we didn't have numbers. So we had to get guys into it and get them, you know, at least make some strides towards getting back in shape. Or feeling like, you know, they had their legs underneath them. And then we had other guys who had been sitting around who, you know, they might have had 4 or 5 days of practice, whereas the other guys, you know, they didn't have any days of practice or 1 day of practice. So, you know, those are the challenges, because everybody that comes back from that is going to come back at a different state. So, you ice a lineup, and I can remember our owner coming down and disappointed with the guys that played. And I'm like, you know, realistically, it's, you got to sympathize with the players here, because they're not all, they're in uniform, but that doesn't mean that they're ready to go. They haven't even had the chance to be able to get up to the standard of play that they had before COVID. So that to me was the hardest part.
And in the Islanders' case, the 4 games that they did play with kind of a makeshift lineup, you know, you as a coach, both at the NHL and AHL level, obviously the communication part is key with your counterpart, either in the AHL or the NHL. When you've got you see a situation where the Islanders are putting 4, 5, 6 guys that are guys that Barry Trotz and the coaching staff haven't seen since training camp, not just into your practice, but straight into your lineup, how do you go about preparing for that?
Well, that's, you know, like that's one of the things when I was watching some of the games. I watched them after they were played, and so I go back and, you know, watch replays and all that, and do it on my own time frame. And you know, I didn't even realize it until they posted the guys, the lineups in the Islander broadcast of I think it was the last game they played, and how many guys were actually out. And you know, to think that you're missing Chara. Chara, Green, Pulak, and Pellick. Missing one. Yes, you know, you're talking about some pretty good defenders, some great experience. They made the comment that Hickey had more games of experience than the 5 other defensemen, and he's only got 400 plus games, and
right.
Then one of the guys, Mayfield, I think, has 300. So you're as much as you want to say, well, you know, we just got to go out and play our game and play the Island away, whatever it is. At the end of the day, you've got 4 guys that are in the lineup that, you know, if they're during a normal circumstance, you might have 1 or 2, and you can, you know, basically spot them in at the appropriate times. Well, that's not even an option. They got to go out there and play. And one of the things when I was watching these games that I've always admired about Barry Trotz's teams is their ability to not beat themselves coming out of their zone. And the one thing that became pretty apparent to me you know, with the subtractions of some of these guys on defense that they had, was they had a harder time getting out of their zone. Like there wasn't that fluidness that, you know, go back, get the puck and come out. There was a lot of, you know, dumping it out and chipping it out. And, you know, you can have the best forwards in the world, but if you're not getting the puck to the forwards in good situations, it's going to make it that much harder for them to be effective. You know, you don't think about, you know, a pass that a guy's got to reach for, he's got to slow down for, it's in the feet, it's behind him, versus the pass that is on the tape hitting the guy in full flight. You know, there's a big difference between the end results of how that's going to play out. So, you know, to me, that's the biggest thing now, is that they've got that challenge of, you know, getting, I think, a stronger core back on D, and, you know, obviously missing Lee, Bailey, and Nelson. Those are three pretty good forwards. And, you know, that's going to have a big hit on your power play. And just from an experience standpoint, having guys that are, you know, going to do the right things when they need to be done.
Now, the Islanders have one goal in the last three games they played, scored by a guy who you know very well, and Andy Andreoff, who you had for a couple of seasons in Lehigh Valley. You know, you pointed out a key difference, which is you can bring up the Andy Andreoffs and the Richard Ponics of the world and spot them in at forward, and it's, you know, you get a lot of energy from those guys, and you can get a decent forecheck, but if they can't get there with the puck because you have so many inexperienced defensemen, then it doesn't matter who you've got out there at forward. But when they're struggling the way that they are to score goals and not really generating anything off the rush because it's so disjointed, do you kind of see what Barry's trying to do by having guys like Andreoff in the lineup repeatedly, that you just have to kind of grind out as many ugly ones as you can grind out when there's no flow in your game?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, you're going to get your goals. You know, you got obviously the power play, and then you've got the rush, and then you have offensive zone play. And, you know, more times than not, your best chances are going to come off the rush, you know, as long as you're creating them. The one thing that a guy like Andreoff does is he goes to the net. Like, he's got a willing to stand in front, and, you know, you see him score that goal with a nice tip and taking away the eyes of the goaltender. But, you know, I think the one thing that I heard this a couple of years ago when they were talking about one of the changes that the Bruins made, when Bruce Cassidy took over, was becoming less reliant on getting the puck low to high and working more at getting the pucks to the net, you know, coming out from behind the net, or if, you know, you're skating up, you know, around the net and starting to head up the boards, thinking more in terms of getting the puck to the net and getting people there. And, you know, I watch Boston play a lot, and I've always respected the job that Bruce Cassidy has done and their ability to generate offense through that. They went from being 2.5 goals a game before he took over to 3.5 goals a game that year. And a lot of it stemmed from the fact that they were getting the puck to the net. That's how they run their power play. They're not necessarily looking for the big one timer or that big home run play on the power play. They're looking to get pucks to the net with numbers to the net. And they do that 5-on-5. And so when you think about, you know, struggling to score goals, you know, this is one area that, you know, like I always talk to my players about, like, you know, it doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be, you know, something that you've got to hold on to the puck and find a better option. Sometimes the best option is right at the net. And whether it, you know, like you, when you think about it, if you're sitting on your bench and the puck goes near your net, there's this anxiety that comes over you as a player and a coach that this potential that puck could go in. When a guy's skating up the wall in full control of the puck and moving away from the net, there starts to be an easiness that comes over you. And guys don't think of it in terms of from an offensive standpoint, but they recognize it defensively. And, you know, so sometimes it's just a mindset, just to have that, you know, thought process that if I'm close enough to take this to the net, you know, it might not get any better than that. And, you know, if you have that mindset. You're going to force the opposition to play a little bit lower. They don't get out of the zone as quick to chase down pucks that are getting dumped out, and maybe loosens up the coverage for the defenseman when you do put it out top. So there's a, I think there's some stuff there offensively that, you know, you have to have a mindset for, and, you know, to go back to Andy, like he's that type of guy. Like that's the one thing I can say having him, that when he played well, that's what he was doing. And, you know, I watched, that was the one thing that I saw that was a common denominator with, Pittsburgh and, Toronto. They had a willingness to get to the net and get the puck to the net, and, you know, different, they did it different ways coming out of their zone. But the bottom line is there was this mindset that they were going to get the numbers there with the puck.
And now two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
And we're just talking with Scott Gordon about some of the Islanders' woes in the last few weeks. Now, we talked about some of the call-ups and obviously the difficulties they're having on defense being as decimated as they've been. Up front, you know, when you see guys like Matthew Barzal and Anthony Beauvillier, Kyle Palmieri, Jean-Gabriel Pageot, you know, they don't look like themselves. And that can certainly have a lot to do with who they're playing with and the roles that they're playing with. When you have guys out, or a team that's struggling, I'm sure the experience for you as a coach when your senior guys or your most skilled guys try to do, you know, twice or three times what they normally do, which always ends up resulting in nothing, almost always. How do you kind of get that out of your veteran? You know, the instinct is obviously we have a lot of guys out, I got to do more. And really that's, how do you convince your good players that that's counterproductive?
Yeah, sometimes doing more, you know, that means you're taking more chances, and now all of a sudden you're not doing the things that give you success. And, you know, I think there has to be balance there no matter what the situation is, whether the team's playing well or struggling, or, you know, personnel doesn't allow you to do what you normally do. The biggest thing is, for me, is just to make sure that you're playing your game and you know, be a good person in the room on the ice. You know, don't let the frustration creep into your frustration creep into the younger players that are, you know, coming up and you know, trying to help the team and you know, do what you can to make sure that you know, everybody's pulling the same way. And you know, if you're coming to the bench and you're banging your stick and slamming the door, you know, that's not going to help anybody.
You spent the last 6 years coaching the Flyers affiliate in Lehigh Valley, which meant you played Bridgeport an awful lot in those 6 years, probably more times than you could count. And I think a lot of complaints, I guess, frustrations from Islander fans, at least in the recent times, is that the Bridgeport team under Brent Thompson hasn't succeeded enough. They haven't produced enough. Maybe it hasn't been enough of a flow of good prospects up to the NHL. It's certainly debatable whether they had enough good prospects, and you are busy coaching your team. But when you've played against Tomer's teams over the last few years, do you see a similarity between what you see with the Barry Trotz coached Islanders when they've been going well the last 3 years?
Well, the one thing I can say, I hated playing Bridgeport because I knew every game it was going to be a grind. They work as hard as any team that I coach against in the American Hockey League. And that's been, whether it was Trotz that was there or Cappy, there were no easy games. And they play hard for them. They block a ton of shots, more shots than any team that we play. They forecheck as hard as anybody. You know, like I always found it to be a grind, and the one thing that, with the exception of maybe 1 year, they've been a team that's had a big turnover of players from an injury standpoint. And not just, you know, the older guys, like a lot of the young guys have been in and out of the lineup. And you know, so I have a lot of respect for Tom. I think that, you know, it's, I don't think he's had a situation where you could say that they've had a full team just because of the circumstances of the injuries that they've had. And I know when that, I think it was my first year back in Lehigh, they, you know, they put together a pretty good year. And so that's really been the only time that I've been able to say that, you know, he's had a full deck of cards to work with. You know, as far as, you know, I would think that as a coach in the NHL, you know, the one thing that you can pretty much assume that when a player goes up, they're going to play the right way. They're going to work hard and they're going to compete. And I think he, you know, that's an important part of development, because a lot of, you know, a lot of guys, I you know, just watching Wahlstrom play in the last three games and then, you know, having seen him play in Bridgeport at times, they're two different players. Like there's a lot more compete and responsibility in his game than what there was before. And, you know, so obviously, you know, Thomas, I think he's done a pretty good job with him. And I know just from, talking to people that saw Wahlstrom when he was with the, Team USA, that he was, you know, there was going to be some work there because they were, you know, they were given free rein to do and make plays as they wanted. And, you know, that's a hard thing to change from when that's the way you've been, you know, taught to go out and maybe play with a little less responsibility and try to be creative. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got to pull back on that a little bit, because once you get to the NHL, you know, those creative, carefree plays, they get you on the bench pretty quickly.
You've had a ton of success coaching in the AHL, first with Providence before you were with the Islanders, and then with Lehigh Valley. You know, success in the AHL is sort of relative, I guess. You know, obviously you want it as a coach, and the organization wants it, and the players certainly want it, but it's not necessarily the most important aspect of what you're doing. How hard is that balance to maintain when you know that, you know, winning games is always huge at every level, but, you know, the organization may be looking for some different things out of your games that you're coaching.
I think the winning part of it, wanting to win, that just helps your team identity, your culture, the atmosphere. When you're in part of a successful team, there's just a completely different pulse within the team. And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be in first place, but when you're struggling and you're not making playoffs, you know, you can get into more individual play. And so that's, you know, to me, the thing that you have to have balance in making sure that your team is competitive and you're playing the right way. Cause ultimately, you know, the message that I'm giving the guys is, you know, you can go out there and do whatever you want, but it's not going to necessarily help you get to the NHL, because if you're in these situations and you're doing some of the things that we talk about that are going to hold you back, then you're not going to progress as a player enough to be able to stick in the NHL. And, you know, as easy it is to say that, it's a constant conversation. You do this, you know, if not on a daily basis, a weekly basis, whether it's one-on-one or through your video sessions. And, you know, so, you know, to me that, you know, just keep, you keep hammering home that mindset, and, you know, usually the winning follows you. And, you know, so I think that there's got to be balance between the two, and that, you know, ultimately gets you the most development of the players when you are winning, because their enthusiasm to play the game's a lot higher than if you're in an environment where there's constant losing.
Well, this has been an insightful and informative first show. Scott, very excited to have you here. It's been, I'm happy that you're available to us, but also not happy that you're somewhere coaching. I believe you're sixth or seventh all time in wins in the AHL. So we're happy that you're spending your downtime with us, at least for every Tuesday this December. So, and hopefully there'll be some more Islander games to actually talk about, so we can dig in a little more on that once they get going.
Yeah, it's you know, it's funny when you asked me, I didn't know what to expect or how you're going to do it. And as I started watching the three games that I watched prior to them shutting down, it was good because I actually had an objective as I was watching the game, not just from the Island standpoint, but just seeing different styles of play and how it was effective. I primarily was looking at how the Islanders were coming out of their zone, and next thing you know, you're contrasting that with the opponent, whether it be Toronto, Pittsburgh, or the Rangers. And you can see, it doesn't all have to be the same, but there's certain things that have to happen for teams to be successful. So it's actually been kind of refreshing to be away from it, but be a part of it enough to know that, hey, this is what other teams do and this is why it's working. And, I always talk to my team about getting into a three-quarter ice game and you see it happening. What snowballs that allows a team to all of a sudden, be able to play from their blue line into the offensive zone versus the opposition only being able to play from the defensive zone to your blue line. And so it's been good.
All right. Well, I want to say to everybody, thanks for listening to No Sleep Till Belmont. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform and leave a rating and review if you're enjoying the show. It really helps us out. You can subscribe to The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. Start with a 30-day free trial, then just 99 cents a month after that. And right now, annual subscriptions to The Athletic are just $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/nosleeptillbelmont. We've got Scott Gordon, Arthur Staple. We'll be back again next week, and hopefully some Islander games to break down for you. See you then. Thanks.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.